episode. Welcome back to another episode of TV I Say. I'm so excited for this one. I have two up-and-coming stars for you, okay? Two people, if you don't know them, you're gonna know them. If you do know them, you're gonna be excited to hear me talk to them. It's Danielle Pinnock and Nori Reed. They're both incredibly talented. You've probably seen them just like on the scene the last year. Danielle, she got her break, you know, during the pandemic. Like, we're all... I mean, I was playing The Sims. Maybe you were learning a language, making bread. I was playing The Sims and smoking pot. But, you know, what she was doing was auditioning for the show Ghost. She was making hilarious, like, TikTok, Instagrams. You've probably seen her on your feed. And they made Ghost. It's an incredible show. So we're going to talk to her later. But first, we're going to talk to Nori Reed. Nori is one of my favorite comedians. Just, Nori's amazing. If you don't know Nori, you're going to know Nori. Nori's on every list, comics to watch, comics to know. And you're going to know her after this. But most importantly, what I think is amazing is that Nori wrote Nikki, who is the first trans character in a live action TV show for any Disney show. And it was for Raven's Home. That's So Raven. Yeah, it's the modern reboot. And see, I love Raven Simone. Okay. Like, yeah, she's an iconic actress. She's a comedian who does not get enough credit for how she can pull off physical comedy. I think we need to talk about it. Last week, the Emmy episode, we kind of talked about how, you know, it's shocking that there are Black women who haven't won the comedy Emmy. Raven Simone, to me, if she was given the right role, she'd be up there. She'd be doing that. Oh, I would love to see her in Abbott Elementary. But also, I would love to see her play me in a movie, if that ever happened. When I was a kid, people used to say I look like her in The Cosby Show. So, you know, I think she could pull me off. She's like silly enough. And back to the show. It's amazing and you should check it out. But I love that Raven is letting people tell new stories on her show. You know, she let Nori write this amazing character, Nikki. So we're going to get into it. What was it like? And how, you know, how did it go down? How did she get to make this happen? It's all great. Sit back, enjoy. Again, you're just going to get to hear two of my favorite people talk about our just like favorite TV shows. You're going to get some recommendations. You're going to walk away from this like, wow, I have so much I need to watch this week. Maybe this weekend. What a lovely thing to do on a fall weekend. So sit back and enjoy. TV. I'm so excited. Today, we're going to do the watch list with Nori Reed, one of my favorite comedians, one of my favorite people, one of my favorite writers. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Did you like come to the table with this idea? Yeah. Were you like, I want to do this season? What was that like working on that process with Disney? Because I would imagine like a kid show, they have so many rules.
Yeah. So we knew that we wanted Raven to have a fashion assistant. She kind of gets her groove back and she starts to want to focus because she's a mother now and she has a family and she's a single mom. And she starts to realize like, wait, what about my own passions and the things that I want to do? So of course she loves fashion. She has a passion for fashion. She gets a studio back running and she needs an assistant. So one of my first thoughts was, okay, you know, fashion, San Francisco, this person's queer. Obviously this person's queer.
Yeah.
And this is a perfect opportunity to have more queer representation in the show. So I pitched a character who was kind of like a Karen-esque from Will and Grace, if that rings a bell.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
So like really bad at her job, but like kind of a heart of gold, a little like aloof and like not really like aware of like what's going. It was a mix of Karen and like April from Parks and Rec,
like with a coolness that lets her get away with it.
Yeah. So what was born from that was the character Nikki, who is an heiress and her dad's the richest man in San Francisco, and she doesn't need a job, but she does because to get her trust fund, her dad is making her get a job. So because she loves fashion, this is the best that she could do. And she's working for free. So that's why Raven's putting up with her BS.
She's
doing it for free.
Yeah.
My relationship is much more with the showrunners. And They were really excited about this character. They were like, okay, we like from the get-go, they were all in. They're like, we love this character. And they really fought with me for having this character. And they were just so supportive and really allies and like in the best way possible. Cause you know, like ally is such a gross, I mean, it's such a loaded and weird concept. And
yeah,
they really did use their power to kind of like to have more representation, which I thought was really cool. Raven loved working with the actress. Her name is Juliana Joel. And to my understanding, they got along really, really well. And just kind of like they even, I think right after filming, they went to like a premiere together, like, you know, it, like in real life. So it's, you know, it's,
yeah.
I feel like Raven really enjoyed this character. And the way, just watching them on set during the production, they had such good, the chemistry was just
did incredible. You get to be on set when they shot your episode?
Episode, you're on set. And it's really exciting because in the moment, if something's not working, you need to think of something on the spot.
Yeah.
Which is exciting. You know, it's like, okay, this joke is clearly not working. What's better?
I mean, I feel like as stand-up comedians, we often feel a divide with improv people, but what I'm hearing here is a connection.
Yeah.
What I'm hearing here is progress.
It's funny because, you know, the character of Nikki, she really, in Raven's home, Raven is, you know, she's the star. She's really, by the way, just like watching her perform, like Raven is such a creative genius. Like she's a comedic genius. Like just watching her, it is insane.
I think one of the best physical comedians of like the past decade.
Yeah.
She's incredible.
She's incredible. And so it's funny because the character of Nikki, her being so inept at her job and so kind of like sometimes insulting like to Raven's character, it's an interesting dynamic because Raven doesn't put up with anything from anyone. And so it was really funny to watch that kind of dynamic of like Nikki saying something out of pocket and her having to like figure out like how to deal with that. You know, it was as characters. It's really funny.
I think it's amazing. if you haven't watched Raven's Home, it's one of those kids shows that I don't think is like just for kids. I feel like I don't know. It's like the iCarly reboot and stuff. I'm like, I like this.
It's technically for kids because it's on the Disney Channel, but it really is intergenerational because of all the people who grew up on That's So Raven, they're tuning in. And something that's so cool is that they're watching it with their kids. And so we're hearing all these stories of like that really bring families together. And I love that idea that like, you know, kids and parents are getting to connect over this show. But yeah, like a big demographic of this show are like millennials who are like depressed and like
we just need the nostalgia to get our serotonin going.
It hits. Like I look, sometimes I do search Raven's Home on Twitter, I'll admit, and it's funny because it'll be like people our age who are like just got off of a triple shift about to tune into to Raven's Home, and I'm like, damn. I'm like, this show is a feel good punch, like people really need this in their lives. Like
I like have had a horrible week. I just am like, I'm going to smoke a bunch of pot and watch Raven's
Home. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And like iCarly and just the things I know feel good. I want to ask that, like, what kind of response have you seen from fans, like about your episode specifically?
Well, it was incredible and also organic. Like there was no, you know, Disney didn't really do any marketing or they didn't do any promotion of it. It happened all organically. There was no PR, there was nothing. It just, people started to pick it up. And then before I knew it, it was in every single publication was like, you know, first ever live action trans character. It was like, it started to hit me what a big deal it was. And I started to really understand that this was history. And I got emotional. Like, it was very much like, I feel like in this industry, I don't know if you relate to this, but it's like we're moving and we're hustling and we never stop to like think about what we're to really take in, like what we do. I'm always thinking like, what's next?
What's next? What am I doing? Am I doing enough? Yeah.
And I feel like,
what's the next project? Yes.
And I finally got to like stay still for a second and be like, oh my God, this is all I've wanted, you know, like as a trans woman, like I grew up in Kentucky. I watched the Disney Channel when I was growing up, when I came home from school. I didn't know one queer person, openly queer person in my town. You know, there was no representation.
Yeah.
And yeah, it means a lot to me that kids now are tuning in and they're seeing a funny, nuanced trans character that was written by a trans person who's just fun and really fits into the Disney culture, because this character is really one-dimensional in the best way possible, in the way that she's fun, and it's not like just because she's trans we're gonna like make it like a special episode, you know what I mean? Like, it's, she's just part of the fun.
Yeah, it isn't, you know, handled with like kid gloves or anything. It's it joins, I think, this long lineage of Disney. For me, like, I grew up kind of the same way. Disney shows were a bit of an escape, but I never really liked the main characters. I always liked the characters on the side because I always thought they were more badass than the main characters.
Wait, do you have an example of that? That's so interesting.
Like, Lizzie McGuire. I was always like, Lizzie McGuire is not that cool. Her friends are the cool ones. They're doing the actual cool stuff, you know? Like that, and that always seemed to be what it was. Like, the main person is always just kind of, oh, I don't know if I want to like sneak out and do this.
Her friends were hot.
And then they're doing cool stuff. And I was always like, I want their story. I want more of that.
Exactly. And also, her friends very much were like queer coded to me.
Oh, yeah.
Like the boy and like her friend, Gonzo, the girl, they were very like queer in my brain.
Very queer coded.
Yeah.
But Nori, you created an iconic episode of TV. Just historic. You did it. And that's why I was excited to have you come on to go through the watch list to talk about the TV you're watching now. What TV has inspired you? You know, were you grew up watching the Disney Channel. What else, you know, made you go, I like TV. I want to do this.
That's a really good question. I did, not to be like cliche or stereotypical, but I really did watch Comedy Central growing up, like as a kid, like as a little, as like a 10-year-old kid, I was like watching comedy specials. And like Margaret Cho was like, her comedy specials were, you know, my mom's Korean and, you know, she has a very, one of her classic, you know, stand-up characters is her mom. And just getting to like, you know, a lot of it is about her being queer and her mom being culturally Korean. And, you know, I really, you know, very much related to that. And Mitch Hedberg was like, you know, I was obsessed with, to me, he was queer. I was like, this is a queer person.
Yeah. I was obsessed with him. Obsessed. There was something that just pulled us in. I was obsessed with like stoner culture. He had drug jokes, but then I also was just like, he's weird. Like, he's different.
My favorite joke, and I'm not to butcher because I can't say it word for word, but the one where the premise is that like at a restaurant when they're calling like Reed party of four and then no one answers and they just move on.
Yeah.
And he's like, Where's the Reed family?
Where's the Reed family?
Why is no one concerned?
Why is no one concerned?
Well, are they in the trunk of someone's car? Like, I thought that to me, that was the funniest thing ever in my life.
Yeah. He got me to think about things in a different way. And that's part of writing jokes is just looking at the things people do and going, what's so weird about that?
I watched that. I don't have much memory of, clearly I'm someone who's traumatized because I'm like, I don't have any memory of watching anything, but I remember like One Tree Hill. I remember a Yu-Gi-Oh moment in my life. I don't remember much. I don't know why I don't remember before college, but yeah.
Just, it's gone.
It's gone.
I whitewashed everything with the TV memory. Yeah. It's like, that's all I have is that I'm like, oh, I don't remember my homecoming, but let me tell you about the episode of Grey's Anatomy where they recreate a homecoming.
Yes.
Because I know where I was when I watched that. Oh, man.
Exactly. Yeah. I think in college I came out as queer, and I think that allowed me to start to remember things, because in college I'm like, oh, I do know what I watched then, but I started to like, I feel like The Office was really like taking off during that time. It was like huge office culture.
People don't know how real that was. I feel like now we talk about it and people are like, oh, people like The Office. But no, it was a culture. Yes. It's still deeply embedded in some people. It ran so deep.
I feel like it made comedy really mainstream in a way, because like comedy felt so, for me at least, I don't know what people probably have their own experiences with it, but for whatever reason, it brought comedy closer to me, where I was like, oh, wow, like anyone can be funny. Like you get like Phyllis, like all of these characters who were just like everyday looking people. It's like they were so funny. It really like, you know, I was like, wow. I was like, I can be a comedian. Like if Phyllis, like, hello, like from a representation, I'm a Phyllis. Like that's who I am. I'm Phyllis.
Oh, yeah. I think I related to, I mean, mostly Kelly, just because I was like, God. She's the closest to like a black girl.
I'm upset. Oh, the fact like when she's like,
but
she's like, I have a question, Michael. How dare you? Like,
how dare you? And just everything with Ryan, I was like, I get it. Like, and me at that age, I was so lovesick all the time. I was like, I get it, girl. I get it.
At times in my comedy career where there have been moments of self-doubt, I literally will. One of my mantras was like, if not me, then who? That really was important to me. Just being like, why not me? Why not me?
Yeah. You know? Why not me? Exactly. Yeah. What shows have you been watching recently? Anything good over the last week?
Recently? I mean, honestly, I'm a Real Housewives girl. So I've been binging, especially in times because I've been moving, like in times of transition, which are stressful, I just like disassociate while watching Real Housewives.
Yeah.
So I've been rewatching all of the old seasons of like every franchise. So I've been doing that. I did watch The Rehearsal, which have you spoken about that with already?
Oh, no. So far, everyone has been like, I haven't finished it yet. It was so hard to watch. I had to take a break. So
I'm a little. I tweeted something in the effect of like, he's not a genius. And like the amount of DMs I got from people being like, I agree. And being like, I do feel the same way, where I feel like we're like, oh, he's a genius. I can't even explain what he did. It's like.
It's like, no, it's very explainable. It's not
genius. He threw a bunch of darts at the board and saw like what stuck. Like,
yeah, what stuck.
It's all editing. Looking
at all of this footage, it's all editing. And I think like the final shot is meant to tell us that when his actual like ass is exposed.
Yeah.
And I think it's supposed to be like, this is just me with my ass out. I'm not a genius. And then all these people are like, oh my gosh, this is actually about like radical male, blah, blah, blah.
To me, the final scene was rehearsed. I don't think that any of that was spontaneous. I don't think I'm your dad or don't you mean mom or the ass being out. I think all of that was rehearsed. I don't think was spontaneous.
Not at all. No. Yeah.
I really like him. And Nathan For You love Nathan For You.
I love Nathan For You.
I guess I'm just getting annoyed at like anytime like a white man does like something that's like outside of a genre. People are like, oh my God,
this is
art
breaking so many walls. And it's like if any person of color, if anyone else tried to pitch this, they would just be like, no.
No. Right? Like, yeah,
it would never happen.
The whole time I was watching, I was like, how much money does this cost?
Why they had to get rid of so many shows outweigh the budget of what Nathan Fielder used to rebuild full bars.
Yes. Between him and the Dragon show, they were like, listen, babes, no Batgirl. I'm sorry. Yeah, no
they were like, sorry, Batgirl. Sorry, Generation. Sorry, close enough. All of you gay shows. I'm so sorry.
You women of color. Good luck.
Go. Like, we're so sorry, but Nathan Fielder needs us to make it snow in Oregon in the middle of summer. Still to come, Danielle Pinnock of Ghosts. Again, it's my favorite ensemble comedy on right now. You know, Superstore? it fills that Superstore hole. If that's a show that you've been like, I need something to replace Superstore, Ghost is that show. So you're going to want to hear us talk about it. But first, we're gonna get into the watch list with Nori. Let's get into the watch list, because some of these shows are the things that we're talking about. First up is Smothered on TLC.
Oh, I've watched previous seasons. I have not watched the current.
Oh.
Or wait, I guess I was thinking about Mama's Boy or like something like that.
Oh, I Love a Mama's Boy. I Love a Mama's Boy is kind of like the Smothered spinoff. Like Smothered was first, and then they realized, oh, there are men who have inappropriate relationships with their moms too, so let's get a show on that. Oh,
this is a woman's inappropriate relationship with her mother.
This one is all like moms and daughters, and this season is the most disgusting one yet. There's this one daughter mom pairing, Francia and Paula, and they like have naked tickle fights. And the daughter is like, my favorite thing to do if I could have do anything over the weekend is like spend the weekend naked in bed with my mom. That's my favorite thing to do. Like when they have arguments afterwards, they give each other full body massages to apologize. It's the mom goes on a date and the daughter shows up 15 minutes later and is like, you can't. No, you have to come with me. I don't like this. And tries to like walk her away and puts a hand on her, like the back of her waist. And the mom is like, stop touching me. It is weird. No. But this season does have the first trans person on it.
Huge.
So yeah, there's a trans daughter, and that story is actually interesting, but then they never really follow up on it because they keep being like, let's go back to the disgusting naked like mom and daughter. That's all they seem focused on this season. So
have you watched the trans daughter with the mother yet? Or
yeah,
what's their relationship?
It's sweet, and it is, the mom is like very supportive and is like, you know, we're trying to discover each other in this new way where we're mom and daughter, and we're very open about like who we have sex with and all this. And everyone around them is like, it's weird. They talk about like who they've had sex with and who they want to sleep with, and I don't like it. It makes me uncomfortable. And like the mom like helps her shave her legs and all this stuff. And some of it I was like, that, okay, I would not do that with my mom. Sure, no. But them, I'm like, that's sweet. Like they're bonding in this new way. It makes sense. Versus there's like a lesbian couple that's been on it for a while. And one of the girl's moms like basically acts more like the girlfriend than the actual girlfriend. Like she goes to all the doctor's appointments. She did artificial insemination on her daughter.
Oh.
Yeah. It's
okay. Any program that makes the trans person look like the most normal, sane person, I think is really good.
Yeah, yeah. So in that respect, actually, Smothered is revolutionary this season. So there you go. Then there's Harley Quinn, which just had its finale, Harley Quinn on HBO Max.
I do need that's to like watch.
It's like the last show they have that I'm like really excited about that's gay and out there and is part of this kind of, you know, out there animation wave they had of adult animation.
I've read for two of these series I've read for and didn't get.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Same. I'm like, oh, I had an interview to staff on this and I did not get it. But, you know, still love the show. Love it.
Yeah.
So much.
I read for The Resort. I can't remember the character, but it was, one of the characters. And then for Harley Quinn, I read for a character. Yeah.
But it's, you know, I don't know if it'll get another season with HBO Max slashing out all of the animation stuff. So enjoy it while it lasts. Up next is Mo on Netflix. Mo follows a Pakistani man and his family living in Houston. It just came out about 2-3 weeks ago. It's incredible. If you haven't checked it out, Rami Youssef.
I have not seen this.
Yeah, Netflix has not really been promoting it because Netflix, they bury anything that isn't, you know, some white.
The algorithm.
The algorithm.
So dark. Yeah.
But Rami Youssef is behind it. He co-wrote the pilot.
Yes.
It's so, so funny.
Who plays Mo, or who's Mo?
Mo Ammer.
Yeah. Mo. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. He's very funny. He plays Mo. He's great in it. So I think it's one of the best things Netflix has put out. Go watch it, because they aren't really putting any, you know, any promotion behind it. So I'm going to do their job for them. And last on the list is Industry on HBO Max.
Okay. I watched the first season.
Okay.
And I need to get into the second season. Is it good?
It's just as horny and weird. Like, you're like, why are all these people fighting for jobs they clearly hate? I don't care. They're making out now at a bar.
Is there peen? Is there still peen?
Oh, there's peen. There's absolutely okay. Peen, please.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah. There's so much sex.
Maybe I won't cancel my HBO Max subscription. Now that I think about it.
I do. Yeah. And I do. Some of it is gay, too. Yeah. It's gay, but at least in the second, it's a weird gay sex scene with the gay black guy.
I'm sorry. It just occurred to me that the star of Industry, she's in Bodies, Bodies, Bodies.
Yeah, Bodies, yeah.
Oh my, I never put together that was the same person.
Oh yeah, and she's amazing. She's so good. Like, she's my favorite part of it and what keeps me watching, because otherwise I'm just like, I don't understand the story. I don't know. They're double back trade stock. I don't know.
I just, I love when queer people and women of color and people of color get to be complicated and messy and toxic. That makes my heart so happy. Like, that's all I want, is that for us to have the same privilege as white and straight people to be messy. Like, until we have a trans woman of color, girls.
Yeah.
Then we haven't achieved equality. Yeah. That's what I'm looking for, is where is our toxic, non-binary girls?
Yeah, I basically pitched that. Yeah, I pitched that, and they were like, you should make it about high schoolers. So I think Euphoria is what everybody wants now.
That's true. I just love a shark. Career, only about career, yeah, only about capitalism. About career,
just toxic. You watch and you're like, why does this character pull me in? And then by the end, you're kind of rooting for it and you don't even know why.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, oh gosh, is there anything you want to add to the watch list? Anything you want to recommend to the people?
Oh, on HBO, I really liked The Anarchist.
Oh, yeah. I love The Anarchist.
I enjoyed it.
We talked about it a bit with David Rees a few episodes ago. A lot of people were like, it's not an accurate portrayal of anarchism or whatever, anarchy. And I was like, that's not what I'm watching it for. I'm watching it because it's about a weird cult that tried to go to Mexico.
I love a documentary, and that's one of my favorite. I love to just kind of, again, anything I can just disassociate to is just really, really fun for me right now in today's climate. But yeah, I love a nice, thrilling documentary with stupid white people who are so stupid.
So stupid. Who are just like, we thought Mexico was a place with no laws and we could do whatever we want. It's like, no.
I love that they included one woman of color who was look, I was there for a little bit, but listen, I knew it was bad.
Yeah,
it
was so racist. I went to another country. Yeah.
She literally was like, I had a bad year. I was in a really weird place. That's why I went to this place.
Yeah.
But don't worry, I left.
I looked around and I was like, not for me. And I got out. And then everyone else just slowly loses their mind. And you just see everyone becoming the biggest alcoholics over the course of the documentary. And
I love The Anarchists. And then also the other documentary that was on HBO, Mind Over Murder.
Oh yeah, Mind Over Murder was great. Yes. I talked about it solo a little bit and wrote about it in the newsletter a bit, but I wasn't completely sold on the whole theater aspect until the last episode. And
I was sobbing when
the grandson is just like, what you're telling me here is blowing my mind. I'm crying. And you just see that they finally are accepting this evidence
through,
and they got through, and it's incredible.
It just like it I feel like, in today's world, there's just such a lack of connection, especially between different ideologies. And to see people sit down with two completely different thoughts and allowing each other in, oh my God, that was like, that was better than sex. I was like, yeah, sex is good, but have you ever seen two people of different ideologies sitting at a table and letting each other in?
Yeah, sit at a table and let each other in and get to know each other and heal community wounds that run generations deep. Hot. Yeah.
Hot.
Yeah.
That's it for me. I don't.
And then the one cop, Bert, who would not admit he was wrong. I just wanted to shake him.
What a piece of shit. His wife was like, for the love of God, please, just admit that, you were wrong.
You were wrong. You messed up. Just move on.
Men will literally, before going to therapy. Admitting they're wrong.
They will literally send, six people to prison who don't deserve to be there. Because they basically were like, he got fired from his other job. So then he joined another cop force just so he could get back at them and solve the case.
Six people to prison for the rest of their lives before admitting they're wrong.
But those are amazing recommendations. Nori, thank you so much for joining us today. Where can people follow you?
Thanks for having me. You can follow me on Instagram at Nori Reed or on Twitter, Real Nori Reed. It's a whole thing. I don't want to get into it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We here at TVISA understand Twitter issues. Please. Thank you so much for joining us. More to come. Danielle Pinnock, you've seen her on TikTok. She's in Ghosts and gracing the cover of magazines now. Welcome back, TV I Say, TV Club, my wonderful listeners. Today, my guest, I'm so excited. To me, she is the star of Ghosts. In my book, the star of Ghosts, one of my favorite shows that has premiered over the last year, the amazing Danielle Pinnock. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Oh my God. Everyone in my family is obsessed with Ghosts. My mom was like, tell her I'm hugging her from my heart. She's my favorite character.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for watching the show. It's so fun to be on. We're having a blast.
And it seems like Alberta really resonates with people. How has the response been?
It's been wild. I mean, I think it's crazy because when I go out into the street, I look crazy. I am always in pajamas, always in sweatpants, head wraps. I just look a mess. So now I'm starting to realize, okay, sis, if you're going to go outside, you got to get dressed now. You got to put it, at least plop on a wig or something because
people are looking.
You know what I mean? Because I'm getting recognized more and it's so wild. So my husband and I, we went to Sonoma to Wine Country a couple of months ago and we're doing a tasting and the waiter was like, hey, I love you in Ghosts. And I was like, thank you so much. And the lady next to me was sitting down with her husband. She was like, is that Alberta? And she fell back in her chair and all the drinks fell down with her.
Oh my God. See, that's the rocket. That's the excitement you cause with this character.
I couldn't believe it. I was so shocked. I was like, is this how Beyonce feels? Is this
it? Yes. Yeah, pretty much. And this wasn't your first TV role. You had been in Young Sheldon. You'd done some other things. But it seems this is the first role that people have just really connected to. I know that you've done some Comic Cons and stuff.
Yeah.
It's just this whole show just seems to have a really avid fan base.
It really does. I mean, we're getting about 8 to 9 million viewers every Thursday, which is incredible. And Comic-Con was a dream. Our panel had about 4,000 to 5,000 people in the audience.
Oh my God.
And, we've all been, in the pandemic and not a lot of us have been outside very much or concerts or things like that. So that was my first time seeing that many people in the last 2-3 years. And it was incredible. It was amazing. And people were dressed up as us. And my gosh, it was so fun.
There's I see fan art online. It's the ghost crew rides deep. They do.
The ghosties.
The ghosties are on it. So what was it like to get this offer? How did it come about? Where were you when you got that phone call?
Oh, it was in the middle of the pandemic. I 2020 November, I was literally in my house making focaccia bread like the rest of America. And I was in my pajamas watching reality TV. And my agent reached out and said, CBS wants to have you do a self-tape for a TV show called Ghost. And I said, wait, TV's back? Like, I thought we weren't doing TV
anymore. I thought everything was animation now. Like, what? Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. And I remember when the pandemic had first hit, I was escorted off set of Young Sheldon. And we were doing our finale. And they were like, nope, pandemic's here. So I was like, oh, my gosh, it's back. We're back. So I saw the role and I said, wait a minute, she's a ghost? And it's in the 1920s and she's from the Prohibition era. And when I was just reading it, I said, you know what? Look, it's a self-tape. I'm just going to have fun with it. I think I did half the tape with my pajama bottoms on. Yes. I, you know, found this like Amazon faux fur for $10 online that was itching me up a storm. I had like the shake and go wig that my mom had let me borrow. And I said, let me just have fun with this. Yeah. And I got a callback and I was shocked. The callback was on Zoom. And I was like, okay, I've never done this before. And I remember they were like, I had this little red hat that from a play called Major Barber that I did in Chicago. And they're like, can we try one without the hat? And I was like, okay, yeah, sure. And I was like, oh my God, as an actor, I'm like, I'm about to lose this job because of the hat.
Because of the hat. Oh, it's this one thing that would have changed everything.
I was like, I played myself. I should never wear the hat.
You should have worn the hat.
And then they decided to have a screen test, which is basically the final audition where all of the producers are there on Zoom and everybody's just watching you from the network and beyond. And it was the same day I had a pitch with Taraji P. Henson for an animation that I'd been co-writing with my best friend, Poonam Patel. And I'm like, I have to meet Taraji. I was like, yo, I love Ghosts. I love this. I know this is a career defining moment for me. I have to meet Taraji.
I think you made the right choice. I would also prioritize Taraji there.
I was like, I have to meet Taraji P. Henson. And yeah. I said, if possible, can they move the audition like up an hour? And my manager was like, they don't move on. They won't do that. Are you kidding? And I said, well, let's just ask and just tell them it's Taraji P. Henson.
Right.
And they moved my audition. I said, okay, great. So I did my pitch with Poonam. And then I went straight into my audition and it was like one of the wildest industry days I had in the pandemic because I was just in my kitchen doing these meetings. I live in a very small apartment. So like that 2 days after that, I was doing a Zoom meeting with my co-creator of Hashtag Book, Lanisa Frederick. And we were just talking about what we're going to plan social media wise for the week. And my manager knocked on my door and had these chocolates and was like, ha ha ha, you booked it. And I was like, Ghosts? And he said, yes, you booked Ghosts. And I've been waiting for that. You big booked it for like 17 years. Do you know what I mean? Like, I've been a journeyman actor for so long and I've been hearing no's for so many years. And to finally have my first series regular, I just broke down in tears and I couldn't believe it. It was the greatest joy of my career, truly.
And were you aware of the British original series? Were you like already a fan? Yes,
absolutely. Yes. I watched a tour through the series. I was obsessed. And yeah. Shout out to the British version of Ghost because we would not be here without y'all. And y'all laid the groundwork. And I'm so happy that we have an American version now so that I could be a part of it.
Yeah. The show has an incredible ensemble energy. It seems like you've all known each other for years. How did you find that vibe in the middle of the pandemic? I imagine you all had to be in your little bubble still.
Yes, we were in the bubbles and it kind of was like we were quarantined together for real. Because, you know, there's all these COVID safety laws and rules when you get on set and we had to stay 6 feet apart. This is pre-vaccines. But I think because all of us had been in our homes for so long without any real human contact, when we got together, it felt like summer camp. And we were just like, "Ooh, let's play. And I think that's the energy that audiences are seeing and loving. It's that summer camp energy. It's that family energy. And I think that's why the show is great for the whole family. And so many people are always like, oh, I get to watch this with my mom, my grandma, my grandma's church sisters are watching the show. You know what I mean? And things like that. Because it's just good, clean fun.
Yeah,
you know?
It, It is. And then it does get, you know, like dark, you know, for older people kind of like me, where there are the references to like drugs and stuff, you know, and there's sex jokes. It's just such a well done show. And like you said, it is for everyone across like all age groups. That's the kind of TV I grew up watching. I always loved things that were like family sitcoms, broadcast TV. What did you grow up watching? Did you always want to be on like one of the major networks?
Everything. I was watching Family Matters. I was watching Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I loved Jamie Foxx show, Steve Harvey show. Loved those. But also a ton of animations like Hey Arnold was my jam. Yeah. That was my jam. You know, so there were definitely some shows that we all watched with the whole family. Arthur was definitely one of them because my grandma didn't have cable and she didn't want to have a TV in the house. So like I would go to my aunt's house and my cousins, I would watch Arthur all the time. But yeah, there were so many shows and I love broadcast TV and I'm so glad that it's back with shows, not only with Ghost, but Abbott Elementary, which is killing it in the game. Shout out to Quinta Brunson.
Right.
Like I'm such a huge fan of that show as well. So broadcast is back, baby. Let's do it.
And what I think is really exciting is that it's back and we're seeing such a diverse presentation of Black women that it's not just kind of, you know, the sidekick that is, you know, it's not one note. We're seeing so much diversity. How does it feel to be a part of that?
It feels amazing. I mean, for so long in my career, I was getting these occupationally driven roles where it was like, you know, the sassy truck driver, the sassy librarian that was like, get that Harry Potter book. Don't be late. You know, that kind of thing. So now it feels really good to play a delicious diva who sings and she's larger than life and she's a romantic interest. And I just, this is the stuff that I've been waiting for my whole life. This is the stuff that I've been journaling and vision boarding for so long. I feel like it's been such an uphill battle for women that look like me, plus size women, Black women, you know what I mean? Like all kinds. And now I'm like the writer's room, we get these diversities in the writer's room, I think really helps a lot. So I'm grateful. I really am. I'm excited.
Up next, we hear more from Danielle about why she's got such a perfect British accent, plus the stories that she's writing herself. TV. And we're back with Danielle Pinnock talking about representation and working as a Black woman in the TV industry today.
I have a page literally dedicated to the struggles actors go through, specifically Black actresses in the entertainment industry and actors, called Hashtag Book that I co-create with my best friend. And we started that page because we needed an outlet for all the shenanigans that the industry would put us through and all the misadventures that we went through. And to finally be on a show that, you know, acknowledges me and sees me fully for who I am, doesn't see me as a stereotype, make sure that like I'm comfortable anytime I get on set, every time I walk off set, every time for press, like they are incredible. It's a CBS. It's been an amazing place to be for the show. So I'm happy. Yeah, I'm really happy.
I mean, and one place where I really see that is your TikToks and your social media. You are so good at like capturing these behind the scenes moments with the cast. Like, I love when you have them like doing whatever like TikTok thing is like going viral. And then you also, you know, did a lot of characters and stuff. How do you think that kind of helped your career and helped you build an audience?
I have to say there was a part of me that started getting tired of, like, I was really getting tired of just being in other people's legacy, you know, like, and just kind of being a footnote in somebody's legacy. And I wanted to create my own. And my background is in theater. I've been doing character work for so long, for many, many years. And when TikTok came around and, you know, reels on Instagram and things like that, I was like, you know what, let me explore doing some of these characters online and see if they resonate with anyone. And my prime focus for doing that is really to bring joy.
You know, I think there's a history of networks not respecting Black actors and kind of bringing them in and not giving them the resources they need. But that doesn't seem to be the case anymore.
No, not with this show. I mean, literally, I have every single thing that I need. And I remember, like, you know, back in the day, and it's probably, I'm sure it is still happening now, where I would have to come and bring all of my things. I would have to bring all of my makeup. I would have to bring, you know, my shapewear, possible outfit choices, all of my hair, if I had any extensions or wigs, or I would have to come to set with my hair already pre-done, just to avoid any kind of mishaps. And that's not the case with this show. They make me feel so comfortable, and CBS has really bent over backwards to make me feel so great and supported on the show. And even with the writers, if there's something that, you know, I read in a script, I'm like, hey, can we try this instead? The showrunners are so open and they always change it. And we have an incredible writers. And they're always just like collaborative with us, which is fantastic. And that rarely happens on shows.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times what a showrunner says is law. You know what I mean? But we're so lucky with Joe Port and Joe Wiseman that they know that they're two white men, you know what I mean? And they know they have this diverse cast and they know that they can't speak for everybody. You know what I mean? So they listen. And I think a lot of showrunners should take their lead in that fact. Just listen to your cast, listen to your writers. They know what's going on, you know?
I think you see how well it works out too when you watch the final product, when you watch the show. And the just laughs per minute on that show, it is so funny. Just the banter between everyone, it's just so well done. And I feel like it is because there is this collaborative energy behind it.
Yeah, it's been a blast. It really has. I mean, the ensemble is fantastic and everybody's so brilliant to work with.
So, you know, you mentioned Quinta Brunson, and, you know, obviously she came up because of the internet. You know, she worked so hard. Like I mentioned, you make these amazing TikTok videos. You were saying, you know, you had done all these characters for so long. How did, you know, those videos and TikTok and being able to build your own audience, how did that, you know, help your career?
Oh my gosh, in so many ways, because I think a lot of people in the industry didn't know that I was an improviser. So like a lot, when I started doing these videos, people were like, wait, I know she does comedy, but she's funny. You know what I mean? And oh, she's a creative. And I think also as a writer, it started to help me because then, you know, a lot of these people that were running the writer's rooms were like, hey, do you want to come on and be staffed and things like that? So being on the internet has created so many opportunities for me because you're able to reach an audience so quickly, you know? And so many people in the industry you're able to reach because we were all just basically at home in the pandemic, just scrolling through TikTok and scrolling through Instagram and, you know, talking on Twitter, you know what I'm saying? So it's been incredible being online and being able to provide, you know, an outlet for myself creatively, to be able to try new things, fail at things. You know, it's been a blast. I've had so much fun. I think probably my favorite thing that I've done was chronicle the full season one of Bridgerton in these like 15 second clips.
Because
I got to be in like dress as the characters and write the scripts and do all that stuff. And
those were just so funny.
I got to give like a huge shout out to my husband, who is the cameraman behind a lot of these videos, Jack Wallace. And he's an incredible artist in his own right. He's an accent coach. And all the Brits that are coming up here doing the American accents, they're usually working with him.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I love the pieces. Yeah. That's him. That's him.
Well, that's why you were able to get those accents down. Okay.
Yes, exactly. I'm ready. I'm like, Shonda Rhimes, put me in, Coach Bridgerton season three. I'm ready.
Yes. And like you mentioned, you are a multi-hyphenate. You write, you do all of this, you know, other stuff. I'm really interested. What are you writing right now? What kind of stories do you want to tell?
Yes. Yeah, so as I said earlier, Poonam Patel and I were working on an animation with Taraji P. Henson called The Unmentionables. And it is a very raucous workplace comedy that takes place in a millennial's underwear drawer. So all the characters are our faves. We got a little lacy thong and granny panty and all kinds of stuff.
Oh,
and they
kind of
help her navigate her life. And that project has been really, really fun to work on. But the projects that like the stories that I want to tell really are from the Caribbean experience, because I grew up first generation Jamaican. My parents immigrated to this country, and I do want to see more of those stories. I feel like the industry, as diversity, you know, slowly creeps in.
You
know, slowly but surely creeping into the narrative. I do feel like we need to get more granular about Black stories. and Black storytelling. And I do want to tell the stories of like what it was like growing up in a Caribbean community, and stories of my grandmother and being raised by my grandmother or my mom, and you know, all of those things. So those are a lot of the things that I'm working on now and developing, and people will see the deadlines soon.
Ooh, I'm so excited already when I'm hearing about this project I'm in, like Taraji, panties, yes.
Yeah, I know, it's wild. It's wild. That is a wild, wild project. And hashtag books, like Lunisa and I were developing that into a series and we're working on it. And that's been really fun to work on as well during the pandemic. So I'll see y'all in deadline in a couple months.
I can't wait. And I do have to ask, because I know the ghosties are going to want to know. The ghosties are going to get mad if I don't ask. If there, is there anything you can tell us about next season?
Yes, absolutely. Well, season two, a lot of people have been online have been asking, will Alberta ever have a flashback? We want to see her in that 1920s club. And that is exactly what's happening in episode two. We are going back in time to the Harlem Renaissance.
Yes.
And it is absolutely fabulous, I have to say. Getting out of that crushed velvet red outfit and into this new one was a joy. Your girl got new hairstyles. I'm singing in this episode as well. So I can't wait for people to watch it. It's going to be so fun.
Okay, there you got it. So there you go. There you go, ghosties. Yes. I gave you some juice. I gave you some tea. There you go. we got a little season two insight there.
Yes.
So what, you know, I know actors, you spend so much time doing like nothing on set. I feel like you get those moments where you're just like, I have so much downtime. Yeah. Are you someone, what do you do? Do you watch TV? Do you read books? What do you like to do?
I'm actually, okay, so this is the thing. I'm somebody that likes to stay busy. So, but the thing is, the girls on, like, we have a, we call it the Lady Ghost Society. We play a ton of games. So we just got all these, do you remember that game Mancala from back in the day? So we just bought a Mancala board. We've been playing Mancala, and it's gotten really, really, really serious. We've had tournaments recently.
Do you like place bets? Are you like betting?
Oh yeah, I think it's gonna get to the bets level, but I'm not participating because these folks out here are brutal. I mean, we were also in a huge Scrabble tournament that almost tore the cast apart. But we keep busy.
I'm sorry. I would love to watch the cast of Ghost play Scrabble.
It's so dope. And I'm going to tell you something right now. Richie Moriarty, we almost didn't talk because he had spelled like something like Fiesta or something that used all the letters. And I was like, don't talk to me all holiday. Like, we were in a full fight.
So that's so funny.
It gets real.
If you're listening, he plays Pete, who is like the nicest camp counselor, troop leader, who's like, just wants peace on the show. I love that he's like, no, I'm fighting over Scrabble.
No, he's a Scrabble savage. Like, literally, like, truly, it's a mess. I'm not going to lie. Ashley Grodman, who plays Trevor, the pantsless ghost, is also pretty phenomenal in Scrabble as well.
That's and honestly for me a little disappointing because I find him attractive because he's such a wonderful himbo. So he can actually spell
the
words.
Nerd you'll ever meet. He knows. He's like, I always call him like walking AP history. He knows everything about everything and really, really well read, just smart guy. And I'm just like, look. I don't play me in Scrabble. I'm done. I'm done with them. I'm sick of them.
See, that kind of ruins the himbo heart of gold vibe, but it actually is kind of sexy too in a different way.
Yes.
So what TV are you watching right now? What do you like to sit back and relax and watch?
Oh my God, I'm watching all kinds of things. I just finished season two of P-Valley, which I was obsessed with.
Obsessed with it.
Like, literally obsessed. Like, I thought this season was so fantastic. And shout out to my friend, Kemianda Katina, who's a writer on this season. I just thought they slayed Nico Anand, who is my booski. I just obsessed with. I thought John Clarence Stewart
Nico
was incredible.
Nico was so good this season. Also, Nico and I was on the first season of the podcast, friend of the podcast. Go check that episode out. But all the stuff with Uncle Clifford and...
It was and J. Alphonse. I mean, Little Murder, like that whole storyline was incredible. And John Clarence Stewart was amazing. And everybody on the show, everybody. Yeah,
I really hope it gets the award attention it deserves. The way they handled, depression, suicide, abortion. They
did
so much this last season and handled it so well.
Beautifully, truly beautifully. I'm trying to think what else. The Bear, watching that.
Of course, The Bear, that's the hit of the summer. Everybody's watching The Bear.
The Bear is everything. Severance took me out. I'm not going
to
lie.
Yeah. Severance. And you got to go to the Severance finale, right?
I surely did. And that finale, I screamed out loud.
Yeah. I can't imagine watching it with other people because I was just like chewing my fingers off the whole time watching it. Just like having a heart attack.
It was so good. I mean, there's so much great TV out right now.
Going back to The Bear, you lived in Chicago. Yes. Do you feel that it's accurate? Do you think it did well by the city?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Without question. I know all those characters.
Yeah.
I know all those people. I said, oh, yeah, this is it. This is literally it. And my boo Lip from Shameless killed it.
Oh, oh, Jeremy Allen White. Oh, I've loved
it. Jeremy killed it.
Jeremy killed it. I still call him Lip because
every time he
will always be Lip to me. Like Shameless. It was like when I get homesick, that was like the Chicago show I'd watch and I'd be like, okay, something.
Yes.
And he just brought that energy. I was like, great. Lip grew up and he's still sexy and now he's a chef and I love it.
this is exactly what I'm talking about. That's it. Yes.
Yeah. And then you mentioned Hacks, Abbott Elementary. There's just so much good TV. Abbott Elementary, the new season is starting around the same time as Ghosts. Like, again, network TV is killing it right now.
I'm telling you, broadcast is back. I can't wait. I cannot wait. And I want to put my bid in to be a guest star on Abbott as a drama teacher. That's what I'm hoping for this season coming up.
That absolutely needs to happen.
I just want one episode of them to pop in.
Yeah, just pop in, just a goofy drama teacher. So, and I feel like the substitutes for drama were always the people who treated you like an adult, even though you were a child.
Oh, absolutely. And I don't think she's actually giving the kids like any plays. I think she's giving them like, okay, we want to do Waiting to Exhale. We're going to do the scene between Loretta Devine and Gregory Hines. Great. That's for you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? She's giving them these really adult scenes. Okay, we're going into Stella Gotta Groove back next.
Yeah, like she's working out her own things through this class.
Exactly. These are the movies she wanted to be in.
Yeah, like you're just kind of like, okay, I guess if you say so, teacher, and it's very clear these are about their own problems.
Exactly.
At the cast, the crew behind Abbott Elementary, I'm sure they're listening. They're going to make this happen.
Oh my gosh, I would love it. That's my dream.
And are there any other recommendations you want to make to the listeners? Any other TV shows you're enjoying?
Listen, I'm watching, I think it's called Instant Home by Danielle Brooks is the host on that show. It's a home renovation show where they basically in 12 hours renovate your whole house. It's fabulous. It is fantastic.
I have been watching that and sobbing.
The stories, the people that need their homes done. I mean, a backstory will always get me. And that show takes me out every episode. I love it.
Yeah. It also stars Adair Curtis, who was in Styling Hollywood. Yes. I love him.
And love in Styling, Adair!
Just so much. And if you haven't watched Styling Hollywood, it was an obsession on the first season of the podcast. Go watch it. Like, it's him and his husband like fighting over having kids while also, trying to style these celebrities. And they mostly work with like Black clients. I wanted another season of that show so bad.
We deserved it.
We
deserved it.
Yeah. I just, they're getting rid of all the things that we deserve. It's scary.
It's true. It's true. Oh my gosh.
But yeah, Instant Home. That is a good one. So that is a good recommendation for the listeners.
Yes. And Danielle Brooks is such a fabulous host. She's brilliant.
Yeah. I'm just so happy to see her doing more things. I really thought after Orange is the New Black, she was just going to like blow up, be the next like rom-com star.
Yeah.
Yeah. I need more of her.
Yeah. I think more is coming. I can't wait to see her in Color Purple. She's going to be knock the socks off. I just know it.
So do you have any other projects coming up that you're really excited about?
Yes. Well, some things that I'm really excited about. I'm writing a book right now, which is taking over my whole life.
Books are hard.
Books are really difficult. They're really hard. But I'm so excited for when that debuts. I just booked a movie recently. I can't talk a lot about it, but it's my first movie and it's with a comedy legend and I have a really big part in it.
Oh my gosh, that's so exciting.
Yeah, so I'm thrilled for that. And y'all just gonna be seeing these deadlines coming up in the next couple of months with the writing things and the movie things and all that stuff. So just stay tuned and follow me at hashtag booked and at body courage.
Yes, absolutely. Follow Danielle. Like, it's so funny. Like, it'll be the best thing on your feed. Like, you need to follow Danielle.
Oh my, you're so kind. Thank you so much for taking the time out to interview me today. This was a blast.
Yeah, and thank you for joining us. We are big fans of Ghost here at the pod. I feel like I talk about it constantly. Like every single episode the first season, I was just like, you guys need to watch this. Are you watching it? It's so funny.
And everyone was just like, we got to get you on the show. We got to get you on, Ghost.
Please. I'll be, you know, someone who comes to stay at the B&B.
Yes, please.
Like, come on, you know. And people were always doing the a good show on CBS. Isn't that the channel for like 60-year-olds? And I'm like, not anymore, baby. Okay, not anymore.
Listen, it's for the youth. It's for the youth.
It is for the youth. And we absolutely love what you're doing with the character Alberta. She is clearly a launching pad for your career. And I'm so excited to see all the other things you have coming up.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. And again,
oh my gosh, thank you so much for having me. This was a blast.
Follow Danielle. Plug the socials one more time.
Yes, you can follow me at Body Courage, BodyCourage on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter.
Yes. Oh, can I ask? I do want to know one more thing. In season two, are we going to get more of the downstairs ghosts?
They'll be popping up.
Okay. Okay. Okay, because I know that's important. I love whenever they're in the
wild
story.
They're just wild. Yeah.
It's just so funny. And I know the ghosties are going to want to know that. So thank you so much for giving us some tea on season two, too.
Yes, absolutely. Anytime.
What a great episode. I just want to thank my wonderful guests again, Nori, Danielle. I hope you feel inspired to write. Go tell your stories, because I know that I do after those conversations. Before we go, of course, I have to leave you with some homework. I'm going to give you some just things you might want to check out for some things I'll have coming for you in the upcoming weeks. Good Omens on Prime Video. I watched season one when it came out. Season two is approaching. So, you know, get caught up if you didn't watch it the first time. Bob's Burgers is back. Season 13. It gets better every season. It's so impressive. The Great North, also back. As you know, we had Charlie Kelly, a writer on the show, on the pod. So it's a friend of the podcast. I consider the show a friend of the podcast. And I'm so excited for season three. I love the premiere. Again, go check it out. I also want to give a special shout out to Last Week Tonight. This past episode got into Puerto Rico. It was really good. And I just thought it really broke down the issue in a way that was great to me. Also, it had a great joke about the Queen that really got me. You know, and this is a show that it gets enough, you know, credit, but I really wanted to give this episode credit. It had some jokes that really got a chuckle out of me. And finally, House of Dragons. That's what I've decided to call it. House of Dragons, not the House of the Dragon. That's a dumb name. House of Dragons, Game of Thrones. That's, come on. That's what it's about. So House of Dragons, I am watching it. I know I told you I wasn't going to. I said, I'm not getting tricked by the dragon show again, but here I am, tricked by the dragon show again. Look, the pacing is so crazy. They move so quickly through time that you don't have any time to settle in with these characters. Allison, I don't really get what her beef is because it just started happening last episode. It's like, we've only had like 5 minutes of you being angry. And now all of a sudden you're trying to like, you know, show who people's parents are. Like, calm down. I don't, you know, you didn't let me live in that resentment for years. Like the original Game of Thrones, it had a slower pacing. I feel like now people expect things to kind of go faster. You know, they don't expect us to watch these, you know, characters actually live through their teen years. So now we've just jumped like 10, 15 years in the future and everybody has like 5 kids. And there's another time jump that's happening this season. So these characters are dying and it's like, we just met them. How can I be sad? But I do love talking to people about it. I think that's why I keep watching. So keep tweeting to me about House of Dragons, because I that is why I watch now, to join the conversation. Everyone is very funny. I mean, come on, Rhaenyra. Rhaenyra is a funny woman. Oh my gosh, she was high comedy this last episode talking about, oh my gosh, these are so your babies. Oh girl, that got me. That was so funny. So keep talking to me about it. You want to talk to me about other shows? Well, hey, over on the Patreon, patreon.com/TVISAPod, we are covering the first season of That 70s Show. We're still going over Smothered, and we're going to be getting into Star Trek Lower Decks. If there's something you want to make me watch, join the Patreon TV Club. You know, get real about it. Join TV Club. Thank you for listening. You got some things to listen to. You got an inspiring conversation. If you enjoyed the episode, why don't you go ahead, rate, review, share it with a friend. Tell a friend. I bet your friends, your coworkers are always like, I don't know what to watch. Let me take care of it. I got you. And then the next time you're at work, you can both be like, oh my goodness. Yeah, I watched Good Omens too. It was amazing. And then you talk about it. And that's how we save the world. Anyway, I want to thank my guests again. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with another episode.
TV I Say with Ashley Ray. Another episode. Another episode of
TV I Say with Ashley Ray is an Earwolf production made by me, Ashley Ray Harris. It's engineered by Andy Carson and produced by Amelia Chapelo. And our original theme song is by Rafia. Thank you to my wonderful guest this episode. And you can always follow me on social media at The Ashley Ray on Instagram and Twitter. Or if you have TV-related requests, hit up at TV I Say Pod on Instagram or Twitter. And you know, we do have merch. TV Club has so much merch. T-shirts, weed accessories, justice for all your favorite shows that got canceled too soon. Head over to podswag.com, go to TV I Say, and check that out. And always make sure to tell your friends. Tell your friends about the show. If you loved it, make sure you rate it, review, and follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen. And for special TV Club members, join my Patreon. That's where you can make me watch more shows. You know, someone's making me watch That 70s Show right now. I'm going to write about it. Can't wait. Go join that. You can also find my full archive ad-free episodes of TV I Say over on Stitcher Premium. Use promo code TV I Say, all one word, for a 1 month free trial at stitcher.com/premium. And yeah, there's some probably amazing old episodes you haven't listened to yet. Go check them out. And hey, for photos, show notes, transcripts, and more, go to earwolf.com.